Welcome, and thank you for listening to today's episode of the Auburn Daily Podcast. It is your host, your guy Alex, a.k.a. Auburn Memes. Find me on Twitter and Instagram at Auburn Memes. Joined with me today from the Auburn Daily team, writer and editor for the Auburn Daily, Lance Dahl. So going to be breaking down the Georgia game from yesterday, talking about some big picture stuff, how it affects Auburn in the short term, and then also what does it look like in the long term? What aspects and areas did they win at? Which ones did they lose? And we're going to do a little breakdown of that and just see exactly, give our takes on what this looks like for Auburn, the UGA game, what could have happened, what should have happened, and where we think there are solutions and where we still have some questions and just what that, how that's going to play out for the rest of the year. So Lance, we're just going to jump right into it. Just give me some cliff notes of your, I guess, some of your bullet points from that game, and then we're going to address the elephant in the room very shortly after that.
Yeah, I think the first thing that we need to talk about here is I think most Auburn fans and some people I was talking to in the press box before this game actually happened, just it's not necessarily if Auburn's going to win the game, how they're going to do it. It's just we'd like to see Auburn make this competitive. That was kind of the message I think I was hearing from most people heading into this week. And the fact that it ended up being this close, I think, is just you have to make that a takeaway here. The fact that Auburn was able to stick with Georgia, regardless of how it happened, that Auburn was able to stick with Georgia for almost nearly four quarters here. You have to be happy with the fact that in year one, Hugh Freeze was able to get really close to beating the back-to-back national champions, the Georgia Bulldogs. So that's my big thing starting out here. And then if we want to dive into the what kind of changed this game here towards the end, why Georgia was able to kind of pull away, is that this is something that's going to be the narrative moving forward, is Georgia had a passing game. They have a really good tight end, and Auburn does not have a semblance of a downfield attack whatsoever. It's for a variety of reasons, I think, but that was the story, I think, at the end of the day in this one, is that Georgia can throw the football, Auburn can't, and you end up costing yourself against better teams whenever you can't throw the ball downfield.
All right, well, I'm glad you said a lot of that, because that's a great segue to what we're about to get into, and that can allow me to cook, because you already laid the ingredients out for me. So I'm really glad you brought up the point about this game being competitive, because you're right, that was the most realistic goal. I think if you go into this game and like, Auburn's going to win, I hate to say it, it is what it is. You can't ignore the reality. Your head's in the clouds. Looking at the defending back-to-back national champions, number one team in the nation, looking how Auburn has looked lately and saying, oh, this is a team Auburn could definitely beat. It was ridiculous. But to come out and say, hey, what this rivalry has looked like for the past 20 years, to come out and look competitive, and for all the recruits in that building to look like, hey, this team's got some fight in them, they've got some tenacity, this coaching staff is doing something different, and doing something different is actually looking competitive against Georgia. Just look back. And if you listen to the episode that I put out Friday of the Auburn Daily Podcast, talked about that. How has this rivalry become so one-sided? Took a horrific deep dive. If you're an Auburn fan, it's horrific. It's not fun to look at, but it is the reality of what it is, of how this rivalry became so bad. And what was the common denominator there is these games were not competitive. I'd said the last time that Auburn has scored 20 or more points in this game against Georgia in a loss was 2009, 07 before that. Then I think it was like 03, if memory serves. So most of these losses from Georgia, Auburn has scored in the teens or lower. Just has put up no fight whatsoever. Definitely not keeping it within 7 points, I guess, minus the really, really bad game in 2016 was the 13-point game. You're not really, yeah, you kept it close. That's not one that moral victory doesn't even count for that game.
Yeah.
So you're right. And there are some really good takeaways that can really say, but also I don't think it's a hot take to say that this was a very winnable game for Auburn. And it just stinks of all of the things that could have done a little differently that would have made this game winnable. And I think that's what makes the loss is coming, but when it is winnable, within your grasp, and you feel like maybe there's some situations you tripped in your shoelaces or shot yourself in the foot, the emotions of it get a little bit worse. And I think that is 100% what's happening. There are a lot of fan narratives that have come out from this game and commentary that I think it's they're fair game. We're going to address them on this show. And I think a lot of people have kind of stayed away from some of that. And I'm kind of glad we're here to tackle it, because these are some really interesting conversation points. So as I mentioned, we're going to jump into the fan narratives, and we're going to start with the biggest elephant in the room when it comes to fan narratives. And we're going to go right after none other than yours truly. So I sent an infamous tweet, now very infamous tweet, after the game. And it's got to be addressed, because like, I really just kind of thought it was like just going to kind of throw a wet soapy paper towel against the bathroom stall and see if it sticks. Like, did not think this was going to blow up as big as it has. As of we're recording, it's got nearly 50,000 impressions, hundreds of replies, and some quotes. So this definitely rustled some feathers and got the conversation going. And the point for stuff like this, these tweets, is to get the conversation going. So let me read the tweet, and we're going to recap a little bit. So I said verbatim, second winnable game in a row Thorne has cost Auburn. Time to look elsewhere on the depth chart, end quote. So let me just say right out of the gate, here's how that should have been worded. And typing this out, didn't think it'd blow up that big, so I didn't really think about my wording too much, because most of the time these things don't ever really get seen. But when it has gotten this, we got to do a slight edit. So Thorne directly cost Auburn the A&M game. That is borderline almost undeniable. That loss was very much on him. Had he done X, Y, and Z differently, Auburn was in a much better chance to win that game. Now, do I think Thorne directly cost Auburn the Georgia game? No, I do not. Now, what I will say, though, in the spirit of the tweet, is Thorne definitely, he's not the reason Auburn lost, but he's definitely a reason Auburn didn't win. And that almost kind of sounds like an oxymoron to an extent. But I'm gonna hear me out on that here in just a second. So before we jump into that side of it, let me just ask you your thoughts on that tweet, Peyton Thorne, and then my little caveat that I added to it.
I think I agree here about how you talk about the Texas A&M game and about how there were some missed throws. You can go back and watch and see the different receivers that Auburn had open that he just either completely missed in terms of just missing the throw, or he missed in terms of just not seeing the receiver at all. You can also sit here and criticize Peyton Thorne and talk about how he has not done a whole lot when it comes to identifying pressures and then checking into things that will help the play or changing the play. And I think we got to see that very notably a couple of different times in this one. There was one play where Georgia is clearly bringing pressure from the left side. Peyton Thorne does absolutely nothing and ends up being a free rusher that ends up causing a sack. I believe it was after a turnover. I think it might have been Jalen Simpson's interception, where you can do different things to make your pass protection better, and Peyton Thorne just simply didn't do it. There were moments in this game where throws downfield, I think, could have possibly been completed. And I'm not sitting here saying that the wide receivers should have caught everything that Peyton Thorne threw. There was a tweet that was tossed out there that said something to the effect of 6 of Auburn's 9 incompletions from Thorne were hit the receiver in the hands. But if you go back and actually look at it, some of those throws were really, really difficult and well defended. And then a couple of them were just simply inaccurate. So Peyton Thorne, I don't think, lost Auburn the game. His one interception obviously came on that 4th and 9 where you have to do something with the football. But I am right there with you, Memes, where you look at Auburn's quarterback situation, you look at what they did in this one with Thorne, and he did not do anything, I think, to win Auburn this contest either.
Right. And so let's dive a little bit more into that, because where I want to get at there is going to be, Thorne is a guy coming from Michigan State. He's just now his third year starting Power 5 football. He had nearly 7,000 yards, really good numbers, even in a 5-win season, still put up really good numbers. So seemingly you bring this guy in and say, Peyton should have a very, very high floor. What his ceiling may be, yeah, who exactly knows potentially what that may look like, but all the same, the floor should be much higher than what we've seen right now. And I always said the floor of Peyton Thorne should be Shaun White, and the ceiling probably something along the lines of a Jarrett Stidham. I thought that was not a I did not think that was a hot nor ridiculous take at all. I thought probably we'll end up landing somewhere in the middle. So what that means, and let's go back to that sack play that you were talking about from the rusher that was unaccounted for. And I'm going through the play-by-play here, and I'm trying to see exactly when that was. Yes, here it was. It was Auburn still ended up getting a touchdown. It was after the interception. Still ended up getting a touchdown on that play. But it was one of those, it was one of those deals where came in completely unblocked. Or hold on, there was two of them. There was one that Xavion Miller missed, and that one most definitely was on him. But this other one, and I want to make sure I'm not getting these two confused. So give me just a second, I'll find that. But I'll still talk about all the same, because when it happened doesn't necessarily matter as much. But when that happened, you can see the blocker coming from the left side.
Mm-hmm.
Pre-snap, he's creeping up. Peyton angles his... I watched this in slow motion so many times, so I had to see this in real time. Peyton, he turns his head. So if he's not seeing it, then you got a zero vision on NCAA. They snap the ball, and it's obvious this dude is just coming. Nobody's picking him up. So my thoughts on this play here, it comes to decision-making. When it is year three playing at this level, year three starting, just dump that ball away. I think it was Fair and either Fairweather or maybe Camden Brown. I'm not sure. There were two receivers who had just taken off on the routes, and they didn't have anybody but Georgia by them. So you could have easily dumped that ball and just zipped it and thrown it at their shoelaces. They weren't turned around. They weren't in their routes established enough to be ready to catch the ball. But you knew, I'm not getting away from this guy. I'm going to throw it. They're right there. They're eligible. So that's not going to be an intentional grounding. I can zip it out and not take the sack and lose 6 yards. But where is that decision right there to make that? That's a veteran decision. Even last year when Auburn played Georgia, Robbie Asher had a lot of incompleted passes. But if you go back and remember that game, Robbie threw a lot of balls away wisely because there was nothing there, can't get a gain, not going to take a sack, not going to give up the hit. And I don't remember, if memory serves, any time this season that I can think of that Thorne has just purposely and wisely just thrown a ball away to survive another down. He did it again. I think he was trying to do it in that Cal game when they should have fumbled touchdown, whatever that was.
Yeah.
But it's that kind of split second decision making that I'm not seeing out of him. And then he's not picking up. It's like he's not reading the defense as well. He's not getting these blitzes coming in. And it is in situations. He started last week against A&M where he took a bunch of sacks. That is it with him. That is one of the few things with him that I'm seeing, and that's why I was fairly critical of, okay, where are some of these decision makings that aren't happening? Now, obviously, the next thing to go on to is the throws that he made. So let's break those down a little bit more, because that tweet was going around a whole bunch, and I think that was also painting a very partial picture of the situation for that. Mm-hmm. Because Peyton Thorne for this game was 10 of 19 for 82 yards and 52.6% completion, no touchdowns, one interception, and he rushed for 92 yards with an asterisk on that. One of those was a 61 or 62 yard gashing of Georgia. So yeah. You take that away, he's somewhere, 31, 30 range?
Yeah.
Over 12 attempts. So my thing about it is the passing numbers are abysmal for Peyton Thorne. This game, and then we're going to take away Stanford and UMass because you can't just pad your stats on cupcake games. So if you look at just what he's done in Power 5 games, Georgia, A&M, and Cal, he has 220 passing yards. He's 25 for 45, which is 55%, two touchdowns, two interceptions. Obviously, none of those being over 100 yards at all. I do not see how that is reasonably acceptable and how people can just not turn their head and be like, oh, this isn't a problem at all. I do not, and this is going to be a little bit of a hot take, I do not like the narrative of blaming the receivers as much blame as they've been getting out there for this game. And I think that's what we're going to talk about a little bit on that whole deal of, it hit six of them in the hands there were six throws that hit receivers in the hands. I think I would have worded that tweet, there were six throws that receivers got hands on the ball. But to say it hit him in the hands kind of correlates like hit it in the numbers, basically being like it was wide open and they dropped it. Mm-hmm. These were not necessarily like dropped balls. This was the receiver was able to touch the ball and did not come down with it. But I think that was a very misleading deal. And if you really look back at some of these, well, just break it down for us. Let's go over those go over those six specific catches that I think a lot of people were, I'm going to say, unfairly critiquing the wide receivers for. And I say unfairly, not saying there's not, they don't deserve some critiquing, but I think they were getting a lot more flack than is maybe deserved given the context.
Mm-hmm. So if you take a look at these six different incompletions, again, you can find this tweet on Twitter at @SSN_Auburn. If we're taking a dive into these different incompletions, we'll start here with the first one down the right sideline to Malcolm Johnson Jr. Malcolm Johnson Jr. is being draped by Georgia defender Tyke Smith. Okay. And the ball placement is a little inside and also a little bit too far out of Johnson's reach because he has to dive slash trips leaning out to try and go get the ball. That's not an accurately thrown ball. If it's an accurately thrown ball, he's putting it where Johnson does not have to jump or dive out to go and get it. It's just not an accurately thrown ball. The second one, yeah. Go ahead.
I was going to say, and I'm going to say this about this one and a few of these others. Like, I think it's okay to say that maybe give Georgia defenders a little bit of credit for just playing some really good defense on some of them. Because it's not like these were all, for the most part, pretty well defended.
Yeah, and that's what I want to get to here with the second one. So you go to the second one. It's on this sort of inside slant throw to, I believe it's Rivaldo Fairweather. And Rivaldo, while he's trying to make this catch, this is an accurately thrown ball, I believe. While he's trying to make this catch, the Georgia defender already has his arm in between Fairweather's body and is knocking the ball out and it bounces up. I don't necessarily think that that's the receiver's fault that he didn't catch the pass. I think it is simply just well defended. I think it was a well defended ball.
Yep.
And then you go to the third one, and this is the one, honestly, where I believe we could have, like, this is the one where I wish we could have had it back. It was a throw down the left. Go ahead.
That's the Malcolm Johnson Jr. one, right? The second one.
The first one is the Malcolm Johnson. The second one is that inside slant to Fairweather that got bounced up in the air.
No, I mean the second throw to Malcolm Johnson Jr. Because the first one was a dive by Malcolm Johnson that he didn't get. But are you talking about the one on the sideline where he ended up getting, they stopped it for injury?
I've not gotten to that one yet.
Oh, sorry. I'm jumping the gun on you.
So in the video, first one is Johnson diving for the ball. Second one is Fairweather bouncing it up. The third one is to Fairweather down the left sideline. And this is the one I wish we could have had back because it looked like Fairweather could have come up with this one. Just maybe, again, very well defended. The defensive back kind of pushed him to the outside, almost out of bounds on this one. Really great play for Fairweather to go up and make an attempt on this one. If you could have had that complete, that would have been huge. And then this is the throw that I've seen a lot of people. This is the throw I want to get to here. It's 11 seconds into this video on Twitter memes where it's this slant on 3rd and 9 with 1:40 left in the game. And Peyton Thorne puts this ball so high up into the air that he's listed at 5'10". I don't think Jay Fair is 5'10", has to go up and try and jump and make this catch, but it bounces off his hands incomplete. I'm going to let you explain this one because I will just say this and I'll let you go. It's not a catchable ball.
Yeah. So, all right, let me get my perspective on this one because I watched it on the broadcast. Now, I was shooting for this game, so I am right in the end zone. I've got a 12 o'clock perspective of this play. So I saw this from a completely different angle that nobody else saw from the broadcast. So I need to cook on this one. So thank you for giving me this opportunity. So what you saw on the broadcast, and I mean, it It was what it was. I'm going to go out here and say it. The narrative of the ball thrown the way it was and saying that that was catchable by Jay Fair, if you throw that ball 100 times, he's not catching it 99 of them. That was a throw that was not set up for success in that situation. And here's the problem. I was looking at that, and I overheard somebody next to me say, like, uh-oh, he's Jay Fair. Look at Jay Fair. He's looking at Jay Fair. And before the play, he kind of turns his head, and he's kind of leaning left. So everybody knew. If I saw it from where I was at, and I was at the POV of the defenders, like, you could see him. You can't see that on television. But from where I was at, untrained eyes, non-football player eyes that are 50-plus feet away from where these defenders are, like, oh, he's looking at Jay Fair here. And, yeah, I mean, Jay Fair had the matchup on this. They take off, and the goal is to not let him get a first down. So, I mean, the defenders are keeping their space on it, and there's that safety right there who's closing in as the throw is about to be popping out because he was staring down where he was going to throw it. So it wasn't a mystery to them. And he pops that thing off like it had a rocket taped to it. And he threw that ball so hard after Jay Fair got hands on it and it clipped. And you can look on the broadcast and see it. But after Jay stopped a lot of that momentum, that ball still bounced nearly 10, 12 yards down the field. That's how much pop it still had on it, even after that. And he does not hit him in stride. Jay has to jump. Stop his stride to jump to try to grab it in the air. Overthrown, not in the right place with way too much power on it. Not a catchable ball. Not a realistic. Is it possible? Yes. Is it realistic expectation to catch that? No. And then even if he does, he's at least 2 or 3 yards short of the first down. Unless he makes an incredible move, he's getting demolished by a safety. And who knows, even at that point, if he can actually get it. Can he hold on to it after taking that hit? It was not that's insane. I think that is a horrific take to think that Jay Fair should have had that. Look at number four. That had you got a bigger wide receiver. You're throwing it to the outside. You got a better angle on the ball. That is really where the ball should have been thrown. Or if you throw it to Jay Fair, throw it lower, hit it in stride, and maybe he's got a chance to make somebody miss or get a dive and get that first down. Do not like the narrative that, wow, the receivers let him down. It's crunch time throw. It's tough. But Bo Nix used to throw a lot of those type balls where it was just like, you know, it's 5 or 6 yards down from the line of scrimmage and Bo Nix is throwing it like he's trying to get it to the moon. And it would just go through guys' hands. Everybody would be really like, oh, why's Bo doing that? Throwing these knuckleballs like he's playing baseball. And it's just like, it looked exactly like that. So if you're going to critique Bo Nix for doing it, which was very fair back then, like, just be objective and critique Peyton Thorne for doing the same thing. Now, it was a heated moment. Would it have made a difference in the game? There's a lot of factors. Who knows? Like I said, had it been completed, I don't even think the chances of it being a first down, so you're still at a fourth and short. But still, not a good – I do not think that is a good or a fair take to be trying to say that that is on Jay Fair, who – it's not like Jay Fair has been a bad receiver for Auburn. He's been the most – reliable, steady receiver for the team this year. Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you for letting me cook. I'm going to close it off for that now.
Can I say one thing about this catch?
We're still on
it. Or this drop, rather. This pass was bounced up in the air by Jay Fair at the Georgia 47. It lands, at the Auburn 47. It lands at the Georgia 37, almost the Georgia 37, 38. So it lobbed, like you said, up in the air almost exactly 10 yards because of the speed on that thing.
Right. And that's what I'm saying.
Go ahead.
No, I'm agreeing with you. That's exactly what I was saying. I watched it in slow motion and I was like, I mean, you remember seeing it kind of in your peripherals in person, but if you really watch it, like that ball had so much steam on it and it was so high. Like, that's how much extra momentum it had after being stopped in his hands that it continued to go that far
and
roll.
If he catches this ball, let's say he catches this ball, he has 3.5-4 yards to go with a safety closing down on him. And then another defensive back or linebacker. I can't tell the number here. I think it's number 11 for Georgia. I'm just going to assume it's a linebacker facing Jay Fair about to just pop him. And he realizes that Fair volleyballed it up in the air, so he lets up at the end. The expectation for your receiver to catch this ball is unrealistic. I think it's fairly, or frankly, ridiculous. Now, the one, the very next throw in this video is the one that really agitates you. Although I think you could also make an argument that this one was just slightly a little too high as well. This little dump off to Jarquez Hunter, where he doesn't catch it, kind of like bounces it up in the air and then drops it on that. That's the first play of that drive where at the very end of the game where Auburn throws a pick and it's over. You would have liked to have had that one. It was also a well-designed play.
But also, so my thing on that is 100%. That one was probably the most, and it's like, you're not critiquing a wide receiver there because Jarquez is not a wide receiver, but it's not really like that play didn't matter because Auburn still ended up getting a first down after the fact. So it's not like had Jarquez completed that pass, it would have had any sort of like game changing, you know, ramifications, because like, it's not like he could have made two guys miss and made it to the end zone. Like he was going to maybe get stuffed at the first down marker, best case scenario. Mm-hmm. But it was definitely a throw that Jarquez should have made. It was not a catch he should have made. It was not a perfect throw from Peyton. It was a little high, it was definitely high from the angle. It kind of looked like it was behind. It was hard to tell from the broadcast. It was still definitely a play he could have made. He bobbled it. He could have come down with it. He didn't. He was just trying to keep running in stride. It didn't matter to the big picture. But yeah, that one was probably the most egregious, where had it been there, Peyton goes from 82 to 90 yards completed that game. Like maybe it makes that stat line a little bit better, but overall it still was what it was. And then there's
there's one more after this. And okay, this is the throw down the sideline where Malcolm Johnson Jr. got hurt. This is with third quarter, 5 minutes left in the third quarter, third and 16. Auburn's trying to take a shot down the right sideline. It's kind of a back shoulder, like Johnson has to adjust, stop, turn around, and then jump up in the air to try and get this ball. As he is turned around and he is catching the ball, the defender, number six, immediately slaps it out of his hand, incomplete. You would have liked to have seen Johnson catch this one, but again, I would like to make the argument that this is simply also a very good play by the defender. And while this ball could have been caught, I don't think that it's fair to sit here and say and criticize the receivers as harshly as some people have with examples like this and just say, Auburn's got to come down with all of these. Auburn's got to come down with most of these. I think maybe one of these or two of these you would have liked to have had back. But this is not one where I'm like sitting here angry that Malcolm Johnson Jr. did not catch this ball, because again, it's just a really good play on a relatively difficult route and just play overall.
Yeah, no, it was well defended too. And it looks like that the Georgia defender kind of got a paw on that as he was coming down and knocked it out. And I even still don't necessarily know. Let's just say it here. CBS broadcast, not great. You can't get replays online. It's okay. Roll our eyes at CBS. Glad that contract is going to be over very soon.
Oh, no more.
I'm not convinced that Peyton Thorne, that Malcolm Johnson Jr. is able to come down in bounds with possession of that. So even if he actually had control, I don't know if he got his foot down or where he landed. It kind of looks like when he would have landed, when he would have had control over it, he would have been halfway, you know, his butt would have been halfway out of bounds.
His back would have been out of bounds with his, maybe part of his.
So even if he catches that, it may not have even mattered. So that one to me is almost an irrelevant point. And the only one that would have really made that realistically would have made a game difference would have been that Rivaldo down the sideline by the end zone.
Yeah,
I mean, that's the one that off we'd had that. But I think sitting here and saying with this few of pass attempts and saying, oh, wow, like one play, the deal's a coach. Let's jump to this next thing. There's been a lot of debate over the game plan and the play calling and this and that. And I think that's going to be a little bit of a danger at rhetoric from the fan, because you're really starting to get in some deep waters of things that folks don't necessarily have a ton of knowledge about. I'm not trying to pretend to be that guy to say, oh, let me give my opinion on this. So we're just going to skim a few things on here with it.
Okay.
with as far as game plan goes, between the two quarterbacks, you have, let me pull up the box. Is it 20 passes? Is that correct?
Yes, you have 20. Yes. You're 11 of 20.
So I think, and then I guess you would have had the two pass interferences, which I don't think are going to be called in there as well. So
yep,
you factor into that.
You also had a couple dropbacks with Thorne where he ended up scrambling instead of throwing the ball.
Yeah, so you have a few more. You have a few more asterisks attempts on there. Yep. And Thorne did well running, so you get some positive yards there. And to be critically fair, Peyton did make good plays with his feet. Obviously, that 61 yarder was his best play of the game, and probably Auburn's best play of the game. He had one good throw down the middle to Rivaldo Fairweather. That was just a great throw, great play. I mean, that was probably the best thing we saw in the air. But overall, we'll say 20 pass attempts with a few kind of in there, where it equaled up being, I think, somewhere in the neighborhood of around 70-30 pass throw.
Mm-hmm.
I just kind of scratch my head there and wonder, like, that's obviously not a balanced attack. And yes, Auburn was rushing the ball well. The Auburn got 219 yards. I believe they were at 307 total offense. So that's, for the number one team in the nation with the stacks of that defense is, like, on paper, yeah, did a great job. But I just can't help but wonder. I think Peyton Thorne was 4 for 6 in the first half.
Yep.
I just, would it have made more sense to try to get your receivers and your quarterback in a little bit more rhythm early in the game rather than come in there the second half and try to air it out a whole bunch when it was more of a necessity, and then sit here scratching your head and be like, oh, it's not working how it needs to be. I'm not going to say if the game plan was good or bad. I think with anything and any loss, you can always say, well, it could have been better. Cause I don't think any coach should sit here after a loss and say, oh, we were great. We played perfect. This was amazing. I still feel like there could have been some things left on the table there a little bit more. Obviously, Robbie was 1 for 1 for 6 yards. Batty got he had 3 receptions. So he's been the best running back as far as being able to kind of dump off to him. Rivaldo Fairweather had 4. Jay Fair had 3. Camden Brown had 1. And I mean, the story of this really has been just the outside receivers have not been living up to any aspects of the hype. Yeah. So I don't know what the answer to that one is. I didn't know if you had any thought, because I'm going to sit here and just sort of ramble it like I'm on a hamster wheel of trying to figure it out. What were your thoughts on the game plan?
I think that Auburn did a really good job attempting to do what they believe this offense is good at, which is running the football. As far as balance goes, Hugh Freeze mentioned something in the post game about how you're going to need to stay balanced. It doesn't necessarily feel like Auburn currently is balanced because of the fact that they look scared to throw the ball unless they are forced to throw the ball. I also want to sit here and say that while I'm trying to give the receivers a little bit of air here for you know, maybe some passes not being as accurate or balls being really well defended, there also is very clearly a lack of confidence in this receiver room, and that doesn't just happen just because you don't like guys. I feel like there's a reason why Auburn really doesn't trust their outside guys, and we've seen them kind of work to Brian Batty. They've worked to Jay Fair, some of these smaller guys. They don't really have a lot of confidence in what they have, and guys like Camden Brown, Nick Martner's been hurt, Coy Moore has been hurt a little bit as well. But there are receivers that you could line up now that are healthy, that you could run on the outside, that Auburn just does not seem to really have confidence in at all. And so, therefore, I think your passing attack is going to struggle because of that if you don't try and work with those guys. I don't know if Auburn's just kind of resigned themselves to the fact that they are what they are. And so, therefore, they're not going to try and work with their receiver room as much 5 games into the year, and they're just going to be what they are here and then make the most out of the game plan and just hope that the execution is maybe there at different points. Or I don't know how they're going to handle this moving forward, but I'll say the game plan for this one, you could have, I think, in the first half, tried to do a couple of different more things on offense than you did. I'm very pleased with the fact that Auburn was able to keep this close and that they were able to be tied going into the break. I think you also could have been up 13-10 or 17-10 if you were able to execute maybe a little bit better in the second quarter. Georgia was able to really fight back there and kind of punch back after Auburn took advantage of a turnover early in the first quarter. But as far as the game plan goes, if you don't get those turnovers, your passing numbers are going to look a little bit more silly.
I think that
you need to establish more balance. Are we going to get it with this year's team? Like I said a second ago, I don't know.
So that's a great point here, and I'm glad you brought that up. So a few things I want to say as far as game plan and decision making. Maybe it's not even the game plan, but there were just a few decision makings. Like, you call a timeout on that first field goal that Auburn got.
Mm-hmm.
You call a timeout at 2nd and 5, and then you just run the ball at Jarquez for a yard, and then you run it with him again for 2 yards on 3rd and 4.
Yep.
And then you go to a field goal. So I'm just sitting there like, surely after that, is there not any more creative play calling we can do in that situation to trip Georgia up there? It just seemed like it was, all right, we're going to call a timeout. We're going to do something very vanilla, something that we didn't really need to waste a timeout to do, and then mm-hmm. do it twice in a row just to settle for a field goal when we had 2 downs to get it 5 yards.
Yep.
That one seemed a little odd to me. And then also, too, it just kind of goes to show, I think the big picture here is, as far as kind of going back to the Peyton Thorne, when I say sort of it wasn't the reason Auburn won, is it's not even necessarily him and his play. It is him and the relationships with the staff. Do they not trust him to throw the ball? Or do they not trust the wide receivers? Or do they not trust the line to block? Already forementioned earlier that Xavion Miller was having a rough game picking up blocks and letting guys get past him. That hurt Auburn. And there were also, as I said earlier with Jones, there were some pretty costly high snaps that threw some plays off as well. Can't have the critiques without trying to give as much full context to everything as possible. And then going back to decision-making as well, and I mean, this has been talked about ad nauseum and debated, but you are punching the ball in with Robbie, it's 3rd and 1, and then you slow the play down, you sub him out with Peyton, and then you have in 2 down territory, and you get nothing out of it.
Yep.
And you also are not running any sort of creative play there either. It was just another kind of run down the middle, very similar to what happened in an earlier deal. And it's just kind of like, why waste the time and just do nothing? Like, from a play creativity standpoint, I'm just going to punch it down the middle here and take Robbie out of it, which completely took a whole different element there. I don't know. Or with Peyton, mix it up and have a misdirection and then have, I know they did it with, I think it was A&M maybe, where they did a misdirection play and then Peyton took off the other way when everybody was going toward the sideline and Peyton kind of snuck out. I think it's when we got helicoptered and got that first down. Like, send Peyton the outside when no one's expecting it in a play like that. It just wasn't there. So yeah, I mean, that's gonna have some question marks. I found it kind of maybe a little bit of a cop-out when Hugh Freeze was like, oh, well, the analytics said. I mean, can you not just, hey, we didn't make the right call there. It just seems like a little bit of a, I'm not going to say, like, Hugh's out there making excuses, but, like, there's some things I think it's okay to just own up and be like, yeah, we did this, but in hindsight, we probably should do this. To confidently double down when you made a wrong decision, I don't know. I don't exactly like what that shows there. I mean, maybe it shows confidence. You do what you do. I don't know. That's not how I'd handle that, but also I'm not making $6 million coaching this team. So I digress. Outside looking in, call me a couch coach if you'd like. But yeah, let's go to the turnovers here. So I think a lot of people, and let's kind of go to the optimism and where I think you and I agree that we were feeling much more we're going to be a contrarian because I think a lot of people felt optimistic on this game. So I'm going to kind of hit some bullet points here of why people felt optimistic. And some of these are legitimately, they should. There's a ton of recruits there. The environment was electric. It came down to the wire. It was a competitive game start to finish that Auburn led for a good chunk of that game and or was tied. So that's good. They kept it within 7 points, number one team in the country at home. You take that. And I want to zoom in a little bit more. And like I said, this is going to be a little bit more of a controversial take, but I want to give some perspectives because it's not fun when everybody talks about the same stuff. I think this game was actually, and I guess the point I want to bring up is, was this game in the short term as close as it really was because Auburn did really well against a good team? Or was it more Georgia gave Auburn a few things on a silver platter that would have made an otherwise uglier game maybe not look as bad? And like I said, optics are everything. At the end of the day, the score is what it was. But if you kind of zoom in on it for conversation's sake, my whole point is, does Auburn feel like there's actual real momentum that they gained from this game moving forward? Minus the moral victory side of it, that you kept it close with Georgia. But as far as like the intangibles, I don't think so. And that's kind of part of the reason why I sent the tweet about Peyton Thorne was, people were like, oh, he looked much better. He looked so much more improved. This wasn't on him. Yes, he looked improved from Texas A&M. Because
but
that
Texas
was
A&M the, was horrible.
Yeah, that was one of the worst Auburn quarterbacking games in my lifetime. Like, that was, it was like, it was the absolute floor of how bad you can get with the sacks, the bad decisions, the just abysmal passing yards. Like, yes, he was improved. Congratulations. You went from an F minus to an F. But that is not something we give an award out for. So yeah, you went from, I think, was it 44 yards to 82?
Yeah.
I don't love that. Your passing percentage is still in the 50s. Don't love it. Yes, you ran better. That's good. But you take away that one play, and I'm not trying to take it away from Thorne. It was a good play, 61 yards. But he made some right reads and made some other kind of quick gains with his feet. But I'm not going to say that was enough where I'm like, oh, man, this is – he totally solidified that he is the guy for the rest of the year. And the same deal with the receivers. I don't think I saw anything that I feel like they can take it forward. Your thoughts on that?
I don't necessarily know if we're being realistic about this offense, if there's going to be a dramatic shift in a positive direction when it comes to Auburn's passing attack. I think that some fans want that. And so subconsciously or consciously, they look at things like this and they say, oh, well, things are trending in the right direction. We've seen better things. Therefore, it's going to continue to get better. Sometimes things can get worse. Sometimes things can stay the same. I don't know if there was necessarily anything that we saw out of Peyton Thorne in this game that would give me optimism to believe that he's going to be so much better in games moving forward. Now, I think another question that we have to ask is how good does Peyton Thorne have to be for Auburn to be successful? Because I think at the same time, Auburn can run the ball. I think the offense can rely on that to an extent. But there's not consistency here, and there is not promise that we've seen Peyton Thorne. We've not seen Peyton Thorne take a step. This game did not make me think that Peyton Thorne took a step. And looking down the line, you've got one game against New Mexico State in November, and then you've got a bunch of games against really solid to middling SEC opponents. Something I would like to just very calmly point out here about Peyton Thorne, and I'm not saying he is. I just think that this is kind of funny to look at. Against Power 5 competition, he's played three games underneath Auburn for against Power 5 competition. By the way, if you go look at his numbers for Michigan State, through 2021 and 2022, they're significantly better. It's like 230 yards plus against Power 5 competition. But this year, he is averaging 15 attempts per game and 73.3 yards passing, two touchdowns, two interceptions. In 2015, Jeremy Johnson averaged 15 passing attempts per game against Power 5 competition, five touchdowns, five interceptions, and averaged 92 yards per game in seven games. We have a few more SEC games here with Peyton Thorne, probably at the helm, doing most of the quarterbacking for Auburn. You need to see things change and improve. And I understand that these situations with Johnson and Thorne, personnel, scheme, all of that's very different. Actually, at the end of the day, the numbers may not be that drastically different between what Auburn wanted to do in 15, what they can do now. But point being, you have to see something change. And I don't know if we're going to necessarily see it. And we did not see it on Saturday.
Yeah, and I just want to kind of give some little perspective to what I was saying to zoom in really, really close here. So when Auburn did, and I'm going to give credit where credit is due here, Georgia gave them two turnovers and shortened their field drastically. Now, Auburn did the right thing and capitalized and got touchdowns on those. But you take those two turnovers away, does Auburn get one or two less touchdowns? And the Auburn multiverse would be the only way we know. But even zooming that out, zooming in that in a little bit further, is on the first touchdown, Auburn got bailed out because they were about to be in third and long, but they got a pass interference play that obviously moved them up a good bit to where they could set it up to punch into the end zone with Jarquez two plays in a row.
Yep.
You take that away. I mean, I think were they 2 for 12 on third down? Is that right?
Auburn was 2 for 12, yes.
Okay. So statistically speaking, there's a much greater chance that they don't convert that third and long than they do, because look at the averages there. They were 2 for 12. So Georgia kind of bailed Auburn out to get them that first touchdown. And then again, on another play, when they got the field goal in the fourth quarter, there was another pass interference play that Georgia got that also pushed them up and set them up to get some more momentum to get that one as well. So you have two scoring plays, and there were not a lot of penalties in this game, might we add. And props to Auburn for two things. They didn't turn the ball over, minus the last play. Asterisks on that. But for the meat of the game, they did not turn the ball over. And I think they had maybe one penalty against them. So, like, that's a huge step in the right direction. Just could look at Cal with all the turnovers there. So there is something. Because we remember the Brian Harsin teams, it was just they – oh my gosh, I forgot what they were in the Missouri game, but they were had one of the worst turnover ratios in the country. So, like, I will give coaching credit where it's due. They were doing the right things to whatever they needed to do to get the guys to stop turning the ball over, and the results have been showing here. But then, even taking it away there, and I hate to get too multiverse, too transitive properties for this, but you have a few of those things to where Georgia turns the ball over. Georgia commits a very key penalty to move Auburn in the right direction. Does this take, if those things don't happen, does this take points away from Auburn and give them to Georgia, where you look at this game and say, oh, this felt a lot worse than it did? What I'm trying to get at here is Auburn did not have a full length field, complete drive that ended in a touchdown.
Yep.
They did not just march it down the field. And when they did get touchdowns, it was both because Georgia turned the ball over with a short field. So I've not seen, and it didn't see it against A&M. I think you had like one good drive against Stanford. This team on offense has not been that team that can just complete a drive and punch it down the field. And I really do think that is because the run to pass balance is not there. And when you have to run a full variety of plays to complete an entire drive, that's where that balance is there. And it is obvious for whatever reason that this team does not trust Peyton to throw, does not trust the wide receivers and or tight ends to catch, or something is up because that balance just seems to be skewed. Or maybe the coaches really do in their heart of hearts believe that whatever their game plan is right and they just do trust them. And they're not, I don't know. I'm not in the rooms. I'm just seeing what I'm seeing. And I think the results, I'm not going to say they speak for themselves, but they got to be saying something. So that's where I'm kind of getting at with that, is like, you know, the feel good side of it. Like, oh, you look at it there, but then you kind of see it of like, well, this team's still not completing drives. They're still not doing some of these things. So do we really feel like that going into LSU and then having Ole Miss come to Auburn, that all of a sudden some lights are going to go off? Or is there really some takeaways for the bye week that this team can see?
Yeah. And I think this is something I was talking about on the War Pours live stream earlier, about the fact that Auburn has opportunities. Let me be very clear. I'm not sitting here saying Auburn's going to fail every time they have a chance this upcoming season. I'm just saying that right now it just doesn't look like I would have a lot of confidence in saying that the offense is going to do a complete 180 or just get better as time goes on. But you talk about the upcoming games memes here. LSU statistically is the worst run defense in the SEC. Ole Miss proved against LSU that they can really struggle at times, both covering downfield passing and also stopping the run. Mississippi State also proved that they really struggled to stop Alabama and their rushing attack. Auburn's got those games coming up, and I'm not saying Auburn's going to go 3-0. I'm not saying that. But if your defense continues to play the way that it is, you will have a chance to be competitive against SEC opponents as the season continues. Is that going to happen for Auburn? Right now, I'm not particularly optimistic that it's going to happen, but at least you have the opportunities. It's not like it's you're sitting here saying it's impossible for Auburn to change and for Peyton Thorne to change and for this attack to get better. I think that some people may be out there saying there is going to be a discussion during this bye week about what Auburn does, not just at quarterback, but also at receiver. I think there may be some conversations about the rotation there as well. If Auburn wants to go to Ashford and try something, just to try it, if your goal is to try and pick up some SEC wins this year, and Thorne is maybe not your long-term answer, you could decide this bye week to just go back to Ashford and just to try it. Just try it and see if that maybe opens things up in the passing game. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But at least there's opportunity here, Memes, for Auburn to maybe make some changes this year. But yeah, it's not, we're not sitting here after a game against the number one team in the country where you lost by 7 saying, oh, it's all gloom and doom for the Hugh Freeze era and for this particular season. It's just not as positive, I think, as maybe some people want to be coming out of this game because of some things that happened in it and some things that have continued to happen that reared their head again in this matchup.
Right. And I think going on the side of to wrap it up here to kind of get us maybe a little bit more of a feel good ending. The game itself, as I was kind of saying, some of the short term negatives are a lot of things we were just saying. I don't know if you had a lot of real tangible takeaways to say, all right, this game really helped Auburn to build onto something. I say tangible. I think some of the intangibles, yeah, absolutely. You look at the stat sheet and I think, some things may be a little bit skewed, and Georgia did make some very key backbreaking mistakes that had they lost this game, we'd have never heard the end of them.
Yep.
They didn't, so they will just be forgotten in history as the pages turn. But we kind of teased at it earlier. Minus us just having to really zoom in and almost like try to be pessimistic here, I think the majority of people, including the national media and a lot of local, are having a lot of positive takeaways. Yes, there are some fan frustrations out there, but perception is everything. And from the recruiting side, where really that's the most important attendees there, that's good. And they had the house packed out. It seemed to be that from the reports that are coming out from a lot of the guys that do cover this team's recruiting, that they thought it was an electric atmosphere. They had a great time. They liked it. It was a great game. They were not there watching fans leave at the beginning of the fourth quarter. That's the kind of game you didn't want to happen. That was the worst case scenario. So, and you still did get some offensive yards. And I think you showed that guys who are there watching could say, oh, I could see I'd be the guy that make that catch. I could make the difference there. I could be the guy getting on SportsCenter for taking down the number one team in the nation. I could get people charged in that field. You know, screw the event staff. Y'all get down here. We just beat the number one team in the nation. So that I think is going to be the biggest thing long term. And that's kind of going to be the name of the game for the entire deal. I don't love how I think it's a little bit of a cop out to kind of write the season away and just say, oh, we're going to kind of write this one off and just wait to the good guys to get in here. I think you still got to put forth the max effort with the guys you've got.
Yep.
And this is the team you got. Coach them up. Don't just sit here and say, they're doing it in practice, not happening in the game. Just wait till next year. I mean, I think play, coach your heart out. Don't write anything off as an excuse. Play to win every single game. And let that be that. So is Auburn fine in the long term as far as postseason or seasons after this one? Yes. I don't feel as great about things in the short term. Yes, you kept it close with Georgia. But in perspective, I'd be happy to be wrong on this. And I got the angel on one shoulder and the devil on another. A&M and Georgia are both really, just from a personnel standpoint, incredibly talented teams. Matchups that are very, very tough for Auburn. And I'm like, okay, I tell myself that. But then I look at the Cal game and I'm like,
but you also stopped.
Yeah, Cal's not a good team. And you saw Washington do them last weekend. I mean, Washington was playing with their, it was 45 points on Cal in the first half. And you're sitting there and you're like, man, and I brought this up in another episode, but really? Auburn, like, they made it that close to Cal and Washington goes out there and does that? So I'm going to sit in there. I'm like, I want to tell myself that, oh, Auburn played, like, these are really, really, really good teams. And, like, Auburn, you know, given full perspective, and that's good. They kind of kept it like that. And I hate moral victories, but then it's like you look at Cal and it's like Auburn is top to bottom way better than Cal, and they still were playing down to that level. And some of the mistakes that I saw at Cal, I didn't see anything at A&M or Georgia that made me were like, oh, those are gone. Like, I still feel like it's some of the same problems that are plaguing it. You are now six Power Five games to where you can't get over 100 passing yards out of anybody. So I'm going to be under the deal for, as far as the season goes. I'm not going to believe it till I see it. And unfortunately, going down to Baton Rouge, I don't know if that's going to be a place we're going to see it. We just got to hope that some miracles can happen over the bye week, and maybe they can really use this time to rest mentally, physically, and just get some stuff together and make the necessary adjustments that they need to get things going. And what I'd love to be wrong on the Peyton Thorne deal and just the light bulb goes off and he's got those Michigan State numbers back and he's back at it. Absolutely. But after five games with a guy that has that much experience and regressed that much, I don't see it. Jarrett Stidham did not come to Auburn and have to develop. He was ready to go. He was a plug and play. Nick Marshall, same deal. When Chris Todd got his shoulder surgery and he was ready to go, bam, he was right after it. And do I even need to speak on Cam? That is the deal when you get transfer quarterbacks. And on paper, Peyton Thorne is the most experienced transfer Auburn has gotten. Like, why would they have to be coaching him up this much? Why should you be having this many troubles with a guy that's done it already? Like, these were Bo Nix as a freshman type of developmental mistakes that I just cannot wrap my head around as to why that they can't get these things to start clicking with him, and why that they don't feel like they have the confidence in him to balance this offense out and make the decisions and make the reads and not be staring your first reads. Sorry, make the checks and not staring your first checks down right at the snap. Those are the things that I just don't get. Cause you mentioned earlier, his numbers against Power Five schools in Michigan State were very, very good. I don't know what it is. We'll see what the answers are. Lance, close us out with your thoughts on it.
If Sean White was piloting this offense yesterday, do we win? I'm kidding here. I'm just making a joke.
I was about to answer it, but yeah, I'll refrain. I think the listeners don't even want to go there.
I think that there is opportunity here for Auburn to improve in the short term, but it's looking more like a long term thing for the Tigers. And you lost on Saturday, but you made it way more competitive than you expected. If anything, you can just hope that the team is able to rally past this and maybe does play impressive during the month of October. All you can do is at this point hope.
Last question for you: what is the score of this game if Brian Harsin's the coach right now?
Probably what we saw in 2021, 34-10. It's probably where it lands. Auburn doesn't take advantage of one of the turnovers. Auburn struggled so much to create turnovers during Harsin's 2 years that I don't necessarily know if they even get the interception or the fumble to begin with.
Yeah, you definitely don't get the interception from Jalen Simpson, that's for sure. So you just go ahead and take that one right out of there.
Maybe in 2021, you know, with Mike Bobo wanting to throw the ball so much. I think it's hilarious, by the way, Mike Bobo being the OC at Georgia now. I don't think it's crossed a lot of people's minds that, by the way, that's the OC that went in with a first time road starter in the SEC and dropped 313 passing yards on your head. It's your former offensive coordinator. Yeah, I don't think Auburn keeps this game particularly close. Brian Harsin's your head coach.
Oh, also, I'm glad you said that. The about the passing yards, because there was one point I almost forgot earlier. It was about a fan narrative that I need to really nip in the bud. Can I cook on this for a second?
Absolutely.
And this is one thing I got to say, and I'm going to make it quick, but there's been a lot of, and I'm going to call them idiots out there, who are making posts of like, the defense blew it. It was the defensive backs. Why couldn't they cover Brock Bowers? They should have covered Bowers.
Mm-hmm.
Bowers is going to be doing that on Sundays here very soon.
Yep.
That is the best tight end in the country, one of the best offensive players in the country. And to just say, wow, should have covered him better, is an absolute insult to like Auburn's players. Like, it's that easy. Like, you no duh. I mean, that would be like me walking up to a supermodel, getting slapped in the face, and you'd be like, bro, you should have gotten her on a date. Like, oh yeah, if it were that easy, I absolutely would have. But guess what? It's not that easy. And he's a really good player. Yeah, I mean, Auburn's got some guys back there. And yeah, I mean, he was getting open and they torched him. But like by that point, I mean, the defense was gassed. So I meant to say that early in the episode, where we talked about bad fan narratives. But yeah, that was a horrific fan narrative to think it was just going to be that simple to be like, oh, this should have covered him better. Like, okay, yeah, you should be an answer to this team, because, man, you got that one figured out. You let an incredibly talented team with incredibly talented players get out there. That's going to be the stuff that happens. And I hate to say this because no one's going to want to hear this, but at the end of the day, like, it's kind of like, how can you stop it? I mean, that was Nick Marshall versus Missouri in 2013 SEC championship. I mean, it's just like, but don't know how we could have done that. I mean, it was literally like an unstoppable force, and especially toward the end of the game, that's literally what Bowers was. And the time of possession, this game was 50-50. And I think if you split that 50-50, or sorry, the time of possession was 50-50, but I think if you can control things on offense a little better from Auburn's standpoint and keep the weapons that were torching you off the field. Now, I get this is in hindsight. Well, yeah, obviously, but you know, maybe they were trying to the rushing. You can only do so much against the number one team, but yeah, no stopping Brock Bowers. Guy's a beast. Got to give credit where credit's due. And he definitely can hold his hat up high for him being a very, very large reason that Georgia was able to get that win. So that was my last thing. And now officially we can close it out. Well, guys, that's going to conclude this episode. Thank you so much for listening to the Auburn Daily Podcast. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Lance, for joining this episode. Tell everybody where they can check you out and get more info on what the Daily has going on online.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Well, you can read all of my written work over at auburndaily.com. Going to have some things during the bye week, just kind of reflecting, thinking more, not just about this Georgia game, but also about, you know, what we're looking forward to for the rest of the season, maybe some adjustments Auburn can make, some of the things that we are tackling in this episode, maybe doing it a little bit more in depth in writing. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at @LanceDaw_ to get my thoughts on what's going on with Auburn football over there.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap us up. Thanks for listening, guys. Y'all have a good day.